TV.
I probably shouldn't tell you what I said this morning. No, I didn't say it to God. I said it to the angelic host. I said it just to any of the angelic hosts who happen to be listening. But, you know, I'm always transparent, and this is somewhat entertaining. I guess you'll like it. I don't know. There is a bad word involved, but I'm going to bleep it out. So don't worry if your kids are watching. It's going to be fine. Although, I don't know if they're ready for this, really. You know, some of the most irritating things in life are those small things that continually go wrong. It's the compounding of minor irritants. They add up. Boy, do they add up. Sometimes you feel you can better handle the big hits. Your resources get ushered in and like, okay, I can handle this. But it's the little things that sneak up on you. And one of the things that always gets me, this is kind of embarrassing, but whenever you drop something, whether it's an M&M or a pencil or anything, especially if it happens to be even a little bit round or cylindrical, it will roll to some inaccessible place and you won't be able to find it. I mean, you'll drop it straight down and you'll look and it'll be nowhere. And it'll roll under the sink. It'll roll under the refrigerator. It'll roll under the stove. It's just obscene. The things that things do. The places. Oh, the places they go. And nobody knows how it happens. It seems to defy physics. But I am convinced that this is all pointed to us so that we will despair of this eon and long for the return of Christ, where everything will stay where it's dropped. I mean, in the celestial realm, everything's going to stay where it's dropped. In fact, I'll even go so far as to say that I don't believe anybody will drop anything in the celestial realm. But this morning, I was taking some capsules out. I believe I was having a grape seed extract capsule. And I have to preface this by saying that I believe that God is in charge of course, every little detail in this world, but he operates through his son, Jesus Christ, and also through angelic beings, messengers. They're his gophers, you know, they handle, manage all the details. And so all these, and when I say this, I don't mean to say that things don't go right. I mean, I think if we knew all the things that go right every day that we just take for granted, the things that work, the things that don't get screwed up, you know, we would be astounded and we would be ashamed. I would personally be ashamed of myself if I were to be apprised of all the things that go right every day, but that pass by my notice just because I'm dense and I don't notice it and I take it for granted that most things go right. But it's the things that go wrong that irritate me, especially dropping things. And where did it go? Where did it go? No matter. Anyway, so this morning I'm taking a grapeseed extract capsule. I dropped it. Oh my God, here we go. Here we go. I look down and I am not kidding you. It stayed exactly where it landed. I looked down and it was directly beneath me. It hadn't rolled under the refrigerator, hadn't rolled under the stove. I looked down and there it was. I was in shock. And what I said, it was early morning. Maria was still sleeping. What I said it out loud, but I said it kind of quietly. I said, "What happened? One of you f***ers asleep at the wheel?" Yeah, I actually said that. So I immediately apologized. Like, you know, they let that one get by. Somebody screwed up. It's like, what? Zender dropped a capsule and you let it lay right where it's supposed to. He's going to get confident. He's going to get cocky. He's going to start loving the Eon, you know. And somebody got called to the office for that one. But it's just the way. It's just the way. So that's minorly amusing, majorly embarrassing for me, and yet I'm transparent, so I tell you these things. I am Martin Zender. Oh, what followed was God gave me, I haven't run 8 miles in a long time. I've been too vexed by these physical trials. I feel like I'm going through some Job-like experiences over the past year. But after I said what I said, and then I quickly apologized to whatever celestial being was in immediate charge of making that thing roll somewhere inaccessible. I apologized to God and everything, and God understands, you know, he's up there smiling. And God gave me a great 8 mile run. It's been probably 4 weeks since I've done 8 miles. I was going great guns in Peru, and then a series of doctor's appointments and pain and antibiotics, just things started to go bad, and I just couldn't run because I was hurting too bad. And so I'm gradually, I still have to have this procedure done, but I'm gradually feeling better. God gave me a beautiful run. You know, and I find that if I was under the old covenant, I'm going to talk about that today, believe it or not. If I was under the old covenant, you know, you're accountable for all these things. But the gospel of grace is so beautiful that God actually takes some of our misdeeds and our missteps, although absolutely there are no missteps, of course, but and then he answers them not with judgment, not with condemnation, but with grace, because God is conciliated to us. Hell's bells, he's conciliated to the entire world. So, of course, he's conciliated to us, we, the body of Christ. And I'm very grateful for that. So, yeah, in spite of what I said, I was rewarded, it seemed to me like. So, God's winking. I'm like, that was a good one, God. I love you. I wanted to continue, I promise you I would, in Romans chapter 2. We looked at the tract from Andy Lonizak. I put it in my drawer. I don't know why I didn't throw it out. This dreaded thing, you know, your life. And he claims that everyone's going to be judged according to the Ten Commandments. And that is not true at all. And what is a shock in Romans 2 is Paul tells us how humanity will be judged. Now, I've got to preface this by telling you that we will not be judged. We do not come into judgment. Somebody judged me for saying that. It was the Christian guy that hangs around here. I can't remember what his name is. But he said, judgment begins in the house of God. And he was quoting 1 Peter, and that's the kingdom evangel. That's the circumcision evangel. But Paul's gospel is one of grace, and we do not come into judgment. Christ took our judgment. Christ took our sin upon him. And he delivered us from all possibility of condemnation. Not only judgment, but condemnation. No, wait a minute. Not only condemnation, but any judgment whatsoever. Yeah. So forget about it. No judgment. But for the rest of the world, for those who don't believe, and even for the believing of the circumcision gospel, there's still judgment for them. 1 Peter, judgment begins in the house of God. But for the rest of the world, that's a whole heck of a lot of people. You're talking about billions and billions and billions of people will appear at the great white throne, and they are to be judged there. And what will be the means of their judgment? What will be the measuring stick by which they are judged? And Andy Lonizak said, it's going to be the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are going to be applied to everybody. And of course, that is absurd. You know why? Because the law only came to one nation. And yet there's going to be billions and billions and billions of people who were not Israelites. Obviously, Israel is only one nation out of many. And so how is the rest of the world going to be judged, the rest of the citizens of the world? What will be the measuring stick? Shocking information here I have for you from Romans chapter 2. I hinted at it last week. I'm going to give you more details on it. Romans 2:11. For there is no partiality with God. And I remind you, I'm in Romans chapter 2, which is Paul is setting the stage for an announcement of the gospel, but in order to set the stage, he has to show how helpless everyone is, how impossible it is for anyone to be saved apart from Jesus Christ. And we know that because of Jesus Christ and his sacrifice on the cross, everyone will eventually be saved, but everyone in his or her own order. 1 Corinthians 15:22-23. For there is no partiality with God. I've been through some of this before, but I'm going to hit some new territory. For whoever sinned without the law, which was most people, without law also shall perish. And whoever sinned in law, those few Israelites the law came to, through law will be judged. It's much better just to simply perish. Perish without law. Why? Why would people perish? Well, because we have Adamic blood. And apart from Christ, perishing, that is death, is the end of the road for humanity, for the human race. But because of Christ, death will be abolished, and it won't be the end of the road for anybody. And it's not the end of the road for anybody. It would be apart from Christ. Again, in Romans chapter 1 and chapter 2, Paul's painting a dark picture of how things would be apart from Christ. Whoever sinned without the law, you would think, oh, that's no problem. I didn't have law. Nobody was telling me what to do. Ah, but there is a law inside of you. It's not the law of Moses. It's called the conscience. And Paul's going to get into that here. Whoever sinned without the law also shall perish. Whoever sinned in law, through law, will be judged. And if I might add, and then perish. After you're judged, then perish. I think that's implied here. For not the listeners to law are just with God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. And I said, I know that's a shocking statement. The doers of the law shall be justified, but that is the underlying principle. There's another verse from Paul in this very letter that says, no flesh at all shall be justified in his sight. Which verse is true? They're both true. No flesh at all shall be justified in his sight. But there's a principle, and the underlying principle is, if you can do law, you'll be justified. Doers of the law shall be justified. Any takers? Yeah, I'll try it. Nobody can do it. That's the thing. So by law, no flesh at all shall be justified, even though the underlying principle is set forth here by Paul. Verse 14, I'm in chapter 2 of Romans. For whenever they of the nations, this is so fascinating, whenever they of the nations that have no law, just like I was trying to tell Lonizak, how can you say that the human race is going to be judged by the Ten Commandments when they of the nations have no law? No law. When they, by nature, may be doing that which the law demands, this is the shock. People think human nature is wicked and evil. It's not. Human nature just has been hijacked, has been waylaid by mortality. And when mortality leaves, human nature breathes a sigh of relief and springs back like a sponge. It has to be that way. Whenever they are the nations that have no law, by nature may be doing that which the law demands. If nature is evil, how the hell could it possibly do that which the law demands? Well, it's just because of the conscience. Most people don't murder people. Well, they must be following the Ten Commandments. That guy hasn't murdered one person. He must be following the law of Moses. No, nah. He has a conscience. He's not murdering anyone because he's following the Ten Commandments. It might look that way, but you can't assume that just because this guy isn't murdering anyone, he must be following the Ten Commandments because of the law that said, thou shalt not commit murder. But that's not why. In fact, the very law that says, thou shalt not commit murder, causes people to commit murder. Yeah, read Romans 7. Paul said, I never thought about coveting much. And then the law said, thou shalt not covet. And the precept, the flesh, that is, getting an incentive through the precept, produced in me all manner of coveting. So the law produces that which it purports to curtail. But it's meant to do that. Because by works of law, no flesh at all shall be justified. So this they by nature may be doing that which the law demands. These having no law are a law to themselves. Now we're getting down to how God is going to judge people at the great white throne judgment. Mind you, the great white throne judgment, an amazing event. Oh my God, we're going to be there. In fact, we will be the judges, I believe. Most of the human race will be judged. We are the very, very tiny percentage of the human race that do not come into judgment. Even certified believing Israelites come into judgment, because judgment begins in the house of God. That's a kingdom, that is a circumcision precept. doesn't belong to Paul's gospel. Because we have better blessings than Israel. Don't feel bad. They don't want what we have. Peter doesn't want to go to heaven. Peter wants to sit on a throne judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Don't worry about it. Don't feel bad for Peter. He's going to be completely happy. All those Israelites are going to be completely happy where God has them. So how are these of the nations that have no law? How are they doing this? Again, it's by the conscience. Verse 15 explains, who are displaying the action of the law written in their hearts. So they're not murdering because of law. It's because they have the action of the law. That is what the law said not to do. They have that already operating in them, in their hearts. Why? Their conscience testifying together and their reckonings between one another, accusing or defending them. And I told you last week, the conscience is an amazing thing. It's not something you can take out of the human body. It's not some physical thing, like you can't have a conscienceectomy, although some people seem to have had one. But consciences can be cauterized, or that is, burned off. They can be screwed up. They can be ruined, which only proves that there is such a thing as the conscience. Everybody has one, but it can be screwed up. The Christians have no conscience when it comes to people burning in hell for eternity. No conscience whatsoever. And so they will be judged according to their conscience. They will be judged that they fouled, they went afoul of their conscience. Well, no, I can't really say that, because if their consciences are burned off, then their conscience isn't telling them that it's wrong. Or could it be that deep, deep down, the conscience of a Christian could be telling him or her, this ain't right. God's going to burn people in hell. Well, I guess it has to be right. Does the scriptures say so? Jesus taught more about hell than anything else in the whole Bible. That's what they're taught. They don't know any better. So I'm not sure about this. Now, it's if they think it's totally fine and correct, then their conscience is not involved, because their conscience is like asleep and dead. So maybe they will be judged less harshly. People who are absolutely stupid and idiotically just, yeah, people are going to go to hell, yeah, and I feel nothing. Nothing at all. But for those who have a twinge, like the Apostle Paul, who when he was Saul, when the Lord said to him, Saul, why? It's hard for you to kick against the goad. So Saul was murdering people, wrecking families, dragging people out of their homes and beating them and forcing them to deny Christ. And his conscience was there. There was not much of it left. There was a few cinders, a little spark of conscience, and he knew something was off, because otherwise Jesus couldn't have said, it's hard for you to kick against the goat. Paul was kicking against something the whole time, but it was operating at such a subconscious level that the guy wasn't even aware of it. He wasn't aware of it consciously, but I'm telling you, he was aware of it subconsciously. And I say it again, or else the Lord could not have convicted him of kicking against the goat. He was being goaded by Christ the whole time. Something's wrong. And I hope some of these Christians have some inkling that something's wrong. They have one little ember of conscience to tell them that eternal torment, eternal torture, God supervised eternal torture, something wrong about it. But then again, those who do think that way will be judged more harshly. I'm convinced of that now after talking this out with you here today on MZTV, who are displaying the action of the law written in their hearts, their conscience testifying together, and their reckonings between one another, accusing or defending them. There you go. That's what the conscience does. The conscience is like the umpire behind the plate, balls and strikes. Here's the killer. Listen to this. This is new territory. Verse 16, in the day when God will be judging the hidden things of humanity according to my evangel through Jesus Christ. This is the shock. This is what I'm seeing here, that God is going to use Paul's gospel as a measuring stick. So what measuring stick? Because what's the opposite of according to my evangel. I don't know. I would think it would be according to Peter's evangel. And what's Peter's evangel? The law of Moses. The Ten Commandments, like Andy Lonizak said. My God, if God is judging people at the Great White Throne according to the Ten Commandments, nobody can be condemned who had never heard of the Ten Commandments. They can only be condemned via their conscience. But this judgment, I believe, is going to be so lenient. Why? Because it's going to be according to Paul's evangel. What is Paul's evangel? What is it? Christ died for our sins. Christ died for the sins of the people who are being judged at the Great White Throne. That's still a fact concerning them. Christ died for them. And so, according to this context, the judgment is still going to be based on conscience, but and whether someone overran it, and whether someone knew or not that something was wrong. Revelation says people are judged according to their acts, according to things they did. Now, before people get nervous about me thinking, oh my God, Zender's saying this, well, since if they're being judged according to Paul's evangel, then everybody's scot-free. Nobody's going to, I mean, everybody's written in the book of life and everybody's going off to the new earth. I'm not saying that. But I'm sure as heck not saying what the Concordant Publishing Concern is saying. You know what Mr. Nock said about this? And you know I have the greatest respect for this man, but he really missed it here. And the book, in the book of the unveiling, where this is spoken of, I should go there now. He says that, and they were each condemned. After the book of life is opened, each one was judged according to their acts. Now we get inside information, behind the scenes information, that it's not only according to their acts, but it's according to their conscience and according to Paul's gospel, according to the death for sin and the resurrection of Christ. That makes this very lenient. But the Nock translated that, and they are the condemned each in accord with their acts. They're condemned each in accord with their acts. Okay, let me look it up. I got to look this up. This is in Revelation chapter 20. Let's do a live Bible study here. Revelation 20. And I perceived a great white throne. I am in verse 11. And him who was sitting upon it, from whose face earth and heaven fled, and no place was found for them. And I perceived the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. And scrolls were opened, and another scroll was opened, which is the scroll of life. And the dead were judged by that which is written in the scrolls in accord with their acts. And the sea gives up the dead in it, and death and the unseen give up the dead in them, and they were condemned, Nock translates, each in accord with their acts. Of the three ancient manuscripts, Sinaiticus, Vaticanus, and Alexandrinus, none of them say condemned, which is catacrino, a down judgment. They all say crino, which is judgment. And the way this should read, if you ask me, is, and they were judged each in accord with their acts. Verse 15, and if anyone was not found written in the scroll of life, it sounds like, what? You're not written in the scroll of life? I believe the majority of people are written in the scroll of life. Doesn't it sound like that? And if anyone was not found written in the scroll of life, why is not? Jesus, that guy must have been a really bad apple. Yeah, his conscience was intact, but he loved eternal torment, and he tormented people with it. So, yeah, I mean, there's people who do awful things in this world. You got your Dahmers, you got your Hitlers, you got your Osteens, you got your Billy Grahams, you got your Mother Teresa's, you got your Pol Pots, you got your, the list goes on. The lake of fire was meant, which is for humanity, the second death. Don't panic. It's just the second death. Martin, what's the second death? Well, it's just like the first death, only more of it. It's unconsciousness. That's what it says. This is the second death, the lake of fire. They're casting the lake of fire. What's that? The second death. This is the second death, the lake of fire. Very simple. Explain this. I have explained this many times. It's death. No consciousness. So I'm not sitting. Okay, A. E. Nock. Why is you may ask, why does Nock say, and they were condemned? He takes the corrector of Sinaiticus. In Sinaiticus, there's a handwritten corrections, which many scholars believe were added by a scribe who was possibly looking at an earlier manuscript. Let's say that Sinaiticus dates to the 4th century. The corrector of Sinaiticus could have been looking at a copy of the original. Or it is possible the corrector of Sinaiticus could have been looking at, I tremble to say it, the original manuscript. And so there's a lot of weight placed on this hand that is correcting the Sinaiticus manuscript. And they believe that corrector, I don't know why for sure, but many scholars, including A. E. Nock, believe that corrector was looking at an earlier manuscript that became available later, that perhaps since then has been lost to antiquity, but could have been the original itself. Who knows? We're talking about the 3rd century here. So I don't think this should be condemned. I mean, that you take the majority rule here, don't you? I mean, Vaticanus and Alexandrinus both say crino, not catacrino, judge, not down judge. Down judge is translated condemned in the concordant version. But anyway, back to according to my evangel. So they're not all condemned because it's a very lenient judgment because it's not based on the Ten Commandments. That's the circumcision evangel. It's based on Paul's evangel. And this is the point I want to make to you at the end of this show. Paul's evangel. Imagine that. The billions of, think of all the people that have ever lived. They're going to be at this great white throne. Adam's going to be at the great white throne. John, Paul, George, and Ringo are going to be at the great white throne. Adolf Hitler, Mother Teresa, Billy Graham. My God, the people that are, Larry, Curly, and Moe, as far as I know. And they are going to have Paul's, they're going to experience Paul's evangel. They will all be familiar at that time with Paul's evangel because they will be judged according to my evangel, Paul says. Let me read it again. God will be judging the hidden things of humanity. All things are going to be made known. The hidden things of humanity according to my evangel. And people are going to look up and they're going to see Jesus Christ. They're going to see you and me because we're going to be part of this judgment. But overlaying everything is going to be the death of Christ for our sin. And they're going to say, my God, what's this? And it's going to come through the ranks. This is Paul's evangel. And they're going to never have heard of it. But they're going to love it. Oh, what is it? Christ died for your sins. Oh, my God. And here's the shock, ladies and gentlemen. We have it now. We are, oh my God, we are so privileged. We are pioneers in it. Like God, Paul was the first, but we are the early recipients of something that the entire mass of humanity who have ever lived will be the beneficiaries of. It's just like imagine watching the construction of the Ark of the Covenant. Imagine being with the guy. What's this guy's name? Is Exodus 31, chapter 1. This guy who made the Ark of the Covenant. Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, of the stock of Judah. God says, I will fill him with the spirit of Elohim. This guy designed, he was expert in gold, silver, copper, lapidary, all these things, and he made the Ark of the Covenant. Imagine being there, being able to touch that thing before the presence of God came into it, being able to watch him, saw the acacia wood and everything. It's like you're touching this thing, you're looking at it. This is what Israel is going to be carrying around, and they're going to be, it's going to be famous, and it's going to be where the propitiatory shelter is. It's going to be where the blood is sprinkled, and you're looking at this thing and realizing what it will be in the future, but you're touching it now. You're touching it now. What a unique privilege. Folks, we are touching, we are now acquainted with Paul's evangel, the thing that the inhabitants of the world from Adam until the great white throne will finally get to see late in the game, but they'll be so happy to see it. We are acquainted with it now. God is causing us to come in contact with this beautiful, gracious message today.